this is tape 1B. We are recording Dora Frelich, and this is Helen Grossman doing the interviewing. You were talking about the blunt. Would you continue with that?
I knew that it's a big organization. And why I knew it is not because I belong to it or I knew much about it. It's just that their meeting place was two houses away from ours. And when they had the meetings, there were always disturbances there.
Was it in a home?
In a home, yeah. It was like a private home. And
what do you mean by disturbances?
You know, there was always somebody watching outside if the police is not coming. I mean, people that belong to that organization. Because it was communistically inclined.
And not really accepted by the Polish people.
Right, absolutely. The reason that a lot of them survived is because they were taken and they were shipped to Siberia. By the miracle of being there, you know, whoever died there, you know, of natural causes maybe, or because conditions there were bad too. But actually the survival was because they had lived through the war, not going through to the Nazi era.
And there were Jews and Christians?
No, that was Jews only.
Only were sent to Siberia?
Only Jews. There were a lot of Christians that were sent, but for different reasons. I mean, we were sitting... Anybody that had number 11 sitting packed on their suitcases ready to be shipped. I mean, we were otherwise not a desirable element to be kept so close to a border, not knowing what's going to come. We were ready that we are going to be shipped out.
You knew that you were going to be shipped somewhere.
Right, yes. That's the Russians, to Siberia. And what my father said, as long as we are together, we'll do whatever we can. We'll help each other. And this is how life was going on. Times were not good anymore. There was not enough food. And
we were getting some kind of a stipend from the government just to go to get decent grades. But your father wasn't getting anything.
No.
And you were living on what you had
before? What we have. What we have, right.
Were you selling possessions at all at that point?
At that time, in our family, there was enough left yet without, but people started doing it. They started trading rather with the peasants, you know, just a material for some food, for some butter or a chicken or whatever it is.
Or flour?
Or flour.
But did you have flour in the bakery? Wasn't he able to have any of that?
Well, probably, yes. Probably he could take some out and have. Otherwise, in our family, as far as I can remember, there was no necessity yet to go and do those things. Other families I knew were doing it already. Otherwise, there was no abundance of food anymore. There was no stores anymore to buy anything. Whatever the Russians brought in, it was at a certain day they told you they're going to give. You didn't care what they gave. As long as they gave, you stood in line. And that used to go on through the night. You stood in line a whole night. They told you they're giving bread, you stood in line.
And they ever give clothing or anything like that?
No. They took everything away from what they could find in Poland. Because Poland, as small as it was a pretty rich country. It was nothing compared to the United States, I mean, but it was doing its best.
Did the Russians come into the houses to take things?
No, I wouldn't say they came into the houses to take things. What they did rather is they brought in a lot of, as I said, army people, and they stationed them in the private homes. sometimes you benefited from it. Because, for instance, with us was staying a Russian pilot, a young guy that used to, they stationed him in our house, and he used to bring a lot of packages from his, what do you call it, like the soldiers are getting the PX or whatever. Mm-hmm. And he used to bring it home. There was always fish, there were sardines, and things like this.
Tins of food.
Right.
Tins.
Or he even used to bring, like, sometimes wood for the stove to burn. You know, they got everything. The families, as time was going on, was getting less and less. I mean, you ate up what you had, and you traded a little away. And there was a lot of promotion of the government in the schools. This, the difference was that in the Polish school, politics were not discussed. Not in my grade anyway. It was, you learned history. And that's why I say that I thought that wars always went on somewhere else. There were always wars going on between Sweden. There was always war in Spain, but there was no war here around. Russia was in war sometime, but not in Poland. I mean, look, what would they come to Poland for a war for? We have nothing to offer or give or take away.
Was Palestine discussed in your war?
Palestine was discussed. We knew a few people, like a few young people, that left for Palestine. It was not the habit of the town people to do. In fact, some families would be very upset, not for the reason that they went to Palestine, but for the reason that they went all together. I mean, families stuck together. This was our survival kit.
When you were living, and when you were at this point, when you had the Bund and going through stages like that, you had uncles and aunts that were around. Were they involved too? Were they busy trying to survive?
I don't think that none of our family, as I can picture it or remember it, belonged to any of those organizations. Our boys, our cousins, which we had many, belonged to the Beitar. That was Jabotinsky's.
What is Beitar?
This was an organization, like Jabotinsky mm-hmm. said.
Let me spell it in.
B-E-I-T-A-R.
And that was Jabotinsky?
Jabotinsky. I mean, he was the main, he was not in our town, but this was his organization. Otherwise, we have to win Palestine by fighting for it.
Mm-hmm.
They're not going to give it to us on a silver platter.
Mm-hmm.
This was his, the boys belonged to this organization, all my cousins. I don't know about other ones, but all my cousins belonged to this organization. And as I've come down to think about it, my husband belonged to that organization too.
Did you know him then?
No.
Oh, all right. But he probably found out about it.
Right. And in fact, Menachem Begin married a girl that lived above my husband's store. Jabotinsky was there to the wedding. And when Menachem Begin, before he became prime minister, he was always prime minister without portfolio, you know, he was always involved in politics and the Irgun, et cetera, et cetera. You know, they came here, it's many years ago. They were honoring somebody, and we were invited to that dinner. I don't remember where it was, but he was the main speaker. And my husband wanted to see him very much. And of course, his wife, who came from a twin,
mm-hmm.
twin sisters, and they lived above my husband's. They had a shoe store. So, you know, all those connections, that was before he, way before he became prime minister, he talked to her and introduced himself, and she remembered. She remembered the street, she remembered everything.
Tell me, when people, at the time of the Bund, were people trying to, poorer people who didn't have enough to subsist, were they, any of them trying to come to the United States or to Palestine or to Cuba or wherever?
Well, there were a lot of families that were getting help from the United States for the reason that they had families here.
And the help, the financial help got
financial
to them?
Financial help
got
to them.
At that time?
Not at the Russian time. That was still when Poland was around. At the Russians,
before
not
Russia.
In, before Russia. And there were a lot of people that got a lot of financial help.
But they couldn't after Russia moved in or took over.
That was
after
it.
After Russia, Poland was divided. That was the
that
end.
Was
that
it.
Was the end. Life changed.
Life changed. And some people became more popular than at the Polish. There's always a change. For instance, some got very good jobs.
When the Polish people.
No, the Jewish people. I'm not
Jewish
talking
people.
About the Polish people. The Polish people were afraid. They were afraid of the Russians.
So the Russians really accepted the Jews at that time?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. The Russians accepted the Jews at that time. There were a lot of Jews that got very high positions. We had a ton of very educated people. You know, there were a lot of lawyers and doctors. They took up a big position. There was a judge. And it went on. We went to school. The schools were established. I mean, it was not war. It was just under a different
government.
And the difference was that in the Russian schools, politics was a big thing. Otherwise, they had a way of praising their government above all. Theirs is the best. And, you know, you brainwash children, especially young adults. The day came when they said that we're going to have, like, fake exercise in case of something. They prepared the whole town, all the schools, all the shops.
What year was it?
That was 1941. I would say it was the beginning of 41. 40. I would say it was the end of 40.
Go ahead.
Or the beginning of 41. And they taught us, you know, the girls, they taught how to be nurses. It was like a survival thing. Rather, you had what to do in case of an emergency. It wasn't preparations for war, rather, but it was preparations for, suppose. And we were supposed to meet, like, on a cemetery. The schools were, like, divided. Some schools were coming from one side and some schools were coming from another side. We used to meet there. All of a sudden, we saw planes. And the Russians, when they see their planes, they say, look, this is our planes. And all of a sudden, bombs started falling. And they said to us, say, look how we are performing. But there started to be explosions, there's fire, and people are falling. That was when Germany broke the treaty with them and took over Russia. Otherwise, they started advancing.
And took over your town.
Took over the part. Our town was not the only thing. Poland was divided in half. We were on the half of the Russian side.
And people started running.
People started running. The chaos was unbelievable. We didn't know what was happening, but we saw that there were casualties already laying on the floor. Our parents were running towards us. The towns were not big, and the Germans came in.
They moved in.
They moved in.
They marched in, really.
They marched in. All the planes, as I said before, why they made an airfield in our town, was probably the only reason, because we had a lot of ground. They had prepared it to such an extent that all the airplanes, every part, they were like when you teach a pilot or you take apart the things and you show him, the mechanical parts were all taken apart. That was prepared way in advance. That was all German thinking. So otherwise, they could not even lift themselves up and fly away, what they could save. They were stuck right there. Everything was standing on the ground. The chaos was unbelievable, because in our town there were a lot of Russian families. They brought them in with the kids and, you know, families. There was a government going on. So they brought them in, they were working. And whoever could, whatever they could on, car, truck, they tried to cross the border and go into Russia.
Were the Jewish people trying to escape to Russia?
First the Russians started, the Jews started too, because they knew. At the time when they divided Russia, and I'll tell you just an incident of my own, not the thinking of anybody else. My mother had a sister living in a town in Lodz, which was called Litzmannstadt by the Germans.
Before it became Lodz?
No, it was Lodz, but yeah. She lived there before the war. She married a guy there and she lived there. Her town, her part, fell into Germany right away in 1939. Now news and little things trickled down here and there. People used to tell stories what the Germans were doing. Nobody believed it. I mean, why? One night we were still sitting in our hometown, but the Russians, somebody knocked on the door, and a guy came in. He was in his late 30s, and he had our address, our name, and he said that he came to give us regards from my mother's sister. Came into the house and he told us that he's going out, that otherwise she would be my cousin. And told us stories what's going on in Germany. We were sitting around the table in the kitchen and my parents made us go out because children don't listen to stories like this. And everybody looked at him and thought he's crazy. I mean, he told the real stuff, what was going on. He said they just took out people and hung them in the middle of the street. They shot them in the middle of the street. They went into the families and just shot everybody at random. They threw children out the windows and everybody looked at him and said, he's crazy. He's absolutely crazy. Why would people do things like this? So we were not allowed to hear this. He stayed for a couple of days. And he moved on. He was all by himself.
Where did he go?
He wanted to go. He wanted to cross the border and go deep into Russia.
He felt he would be
safe
there.
Safe, yeah. Mm-hmm. Because he already came. He already went through what was waiting for us now. But we did not believe him. Now the Germans came in. And time started getting very rough.
You had two soldiers living with you and your husband.
They ran away.
They ran away.
They ran away.
As soon as the Germans came
in. As soon as the Germans came in. If they ever survived or not, I don't even know.
Mm-hmm.
But whatever was moving, they tried to get on trucks. They were like 1,000 people on one truck hanging from all sides just to get out. They wanted to go back into Russia. And this is when the real thing was starting.
This was 1940?
1941, I would say, beginning of 1941.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as we know now the Germans were occupying, going, and their destruction was against the Jews. They made their main obstacle, their main thing, was to destroy the Jews. So they started right away. For a while they let us live in our own homes, then they started making ghettos. We lived for about 6 months, I would say, in our own house. And then we were forced to go into the ghetto. They also started...
How far away was the ghetto from your house? And was it a...
In walking distance, but it was, you were not allowed to go back to your house. Your house was then occupied by Gentile people that took over your house.
Gentile people were from where?
From my town.
And they would just take over homes?
Take over...
Promiscuously.
Yes, yes, they would take over everything. You were just... not only were you allowed to take a certain amount, you couldn't. There was no room where to put anything. We lived in one room, a family of, by that time we already had the baby in 41. Yeah, the baby was born in 40.
A boy.
A girl.
Oh, no.
So we were already six people. And we lived in one room.
With whatever you could carry.
Whatever we could carry. Well, first of all, the elders of the town got together and made a Judenrat. J-U-D-E-N-R-A-T, Judenrat.
And that was an organization?
It was an organization that used to take care on the needs of the Germans, otherwise.
Of the Jews. Needs of the Jews.
The needs for the Germans out of the Jews. Otherwise, if they needed 204 coats, it had to be delivered to them. But instead of them not going to the houses, they had to be delivered to the Judenrat. Otherwise, everything to appease them.
In other words, this was a German or a Jewish
Jewish organization.
Jewish organization.
Jewish organization.
To appease.
To appease. And to keep order, you know. It just so happened that our little town, somehow, I don't know by what miracle, kept on going. They brought in a lot of people from adjoining little towns of Jews to our town, to our ghetto. It was already the ghetto.
It was just one ghetto there.
It was one ghetto, yeah. Okay. And we had to accommodate them all. Sometimes we lived 4 and 5 families in one room. Sicknesses and lack of food was great. But we still were together. And that made up, you know, for other things. At that time, I was already like 15. We organized clubs. We used to come to, but no names. Just get together. We used to sing. We used to read poetry. We met a lot of people from other towns. Like, you know, in my times, you didn't travel that much. You knew the people from your town, and this is how it went. When other young people come and they bring other ideas and different songs and different things, we made a cultural club and we used to like prepare little plays. We were already getting to that stage when we were young. We were not children anymore.
Young
we
adults.
Adults. We already knew the situation is not good. Every day we had to, the Judenrat had to prepare an amount of people that went to work. That was taken care through them.
And they would go to the factories or?
They would go to the homes. For instance, my father was a very tall man. A tall man on any job took a certain kind of a beating, licking, or whatever it is. So me and my sister used to go instead of him. if we could, at that time we still could. Our job was to knit. We needed gloves and socks and those hats for the German soldiers.
Mm-hmm. To knit helmets.
Right. So if we could spare my father not to go out to work, which was always outside work of building or whatever it was. And this is how a ghetto existed. It wasn't good. It was bad. But there was a lot of hope. An awful lot of hope. It was this and the closeness of the families, I think, to stay with the family together, why so many of our people were killed. Because if, for instance, the parents and the children would not, if the children would not care so much for the parents and want to save just their lives, they would run away, which people did, but very little. The family came first. If you had an older son and four little children, and the son came to the father and said, "Dad, they are running away to the forest. You see what's going on. You hear the stories." He said, "Now you're going to leave me to the family?"
So how could he leave?
So he stayed. So he didn't go. He stayed with the family.
Well, what chances did the people who ran to the forest have?
Some survived, some did not.
Did you see any of it as far as when the Germans would find you? Did you see anything that happened?
When they found them in from the forest?
Or either in the forest or in the towns or whatever.
First of all, they took out the first, what they call the Aktions. They took out 15 Jews.
What is that? What is Aktions?
It means like the first
group
of Jews, for no reason at all, but something that was like they were maybe in jobs that they thought that could damage them or anything like it. They took them out in the shot and in the middle. Akcja. This is in Polish. Action wouldn't be it.
A.K.?
A.K.?
Aktions. A.K.?
A.K.C.J.A. Aktion. This is, I really don't know how to spell it any
other
way. All right,
go ahead. You said they would take the Aktions?
This was the first account that they took out like 15 Jews from our town, and they killed them.
Did you see this?
I, for one, did not see it. One of my oldest cousins, one of them.
And they shot them?
They shot them in the middle of the marketplace. Started circulating. Why? Some said because they belonged to the Bund. Some said they belonged to another organization. Otherwise, they were not the proper people. They could stir some problems or trouble. Then we knew before, but we knew that right then that the situation is getting worse and worse.
What did they do with the bodies? Did they bury them?
They buried them there.
Did the Germans bury them?
No, the Jews buried them.
Right there in the middle of the town?
Not in the middle of the town, no. They buried them in a cemetery. Then the population in our town started swelling tremendously because they brought in from all around. And we thought that we'll survive there.
More Jews.
Yeah. They have liquidated almost all the ghettos surrounding our town, all little towns, and whoever could make it. Some they were walking for 2 days and two nights. Whoever died on the way, whoever came in, the Judenrat, that was the organization,
mm-hmm.
waited for them, tried to accommodate them, a place where to sleep, eat, and some clothing. And between, I always heard people talking that we are going to be the only town that's going to survive the war.
So they would all be taken into the ghetto.
All to the ghetto.
But the ghetto's walls were still the same.
The same. The sicknesses were great because there was no medicine. And as you get weaker and there's no food, then there is more sicknesses. But still the families were going on. A family is a tremendous strength. My father was the youngest, I think, of 8 or 9 children. And everybody used to say to him, "You are so young. Why don't you
This is tape one, side one. This is Helen Grossman interviewing Dora Frelich about the Holocaust and her experiences. She lives at 7929 Anita Drive, Philadelphia, 19111. And this is October 24th, 1984. We're going to start with her story. Tell me, Dora, where you were born, the date, and a little bit about your family.
I was born in Poland on December 25th, 1926, in a small town not far from Białystok.
Do you remember the name of the town?
Yes, Prużany.
Can you spell it?
Pruzany. Let's see how it pronounced. Okay.
Good. Tell me about your family.
We were a family of four. Or rather, five. My father had a bakery, and we were very well-to-do. Our children were brought up a very nice way. We played the piano, we went to good schools, we went on nice vacations. We had private teachers for Hebrew and for Yiddish.
These were public schools?
Public school was the Polish school. We had private teachers that came after school and taught us Yiddish and Hebrew. This is how we come to speak these languages. It was a nice town, a lot of Jews.
The neighborhood was Jewish?
The neighborhood was strictly Jewish. I, as a rule, did not encounter any anti-Semitism. Maybe I was too young to realize, or we were too young children to. We played together, we ate together, we visited each other.
In their homes?
In their homes, they came to our house.
How did their parents treat you?
I have no bad memories of this at all. Maybe it was just that age that you don't grasp yet any anti-Semitism. We always had a maid that worked in our house because my mother worked with my father. And she was like with us forever. She was gentle. She spoke Yiddish just like us. So I didn't know how to...
Was it a kosher home?
We were not Orthodox. We are what you call now conservative. We were closed for the holidays, our store. And we belonged to a synagogue. Of course, the synagogue was more Orthodox than my father was, but this is the only synagogue that was then.
In the town?
In the town. There were a few, but they were all the same. They were Orthodox.
Did your family go on Shabbos to the synagogue?
No.
You were open. The store was open.
The store was open, but we had Gentile people that worked in the store. See, a bakery back home is a very hard business. It was all done by hands, not like with machines now. And we had Gentile people that worked for us for years and years, since I can remember.
Did your parents work on Shabbos, on Friday night and Saturday?
My father usually did not work nights because that's when he used to go to sleep. He worked during the day. But on Shabbos, my mother did not go in. We had Gentile people that worked in the store.
And your father went in?
And my father used to go in, but he was never in the front, you know.
He would be in the back
of the bakery, right. We had a very beautiful life.
Where were you in the family? The oldest,
I was,
the youngest?
No, I was the second to the oldest. I had a sister that was a year and a half older than me.
Then
I had a brother that was 3 years younger. And then we had a baby that was born in 1942.
Oh, the baby lived?
Yeah. The baby lived, the baby was alright.
And it was alright. Now that's... Then your life was very pleasant. Were there any other Jewish organizations that you belonged to besides the synagogue? Before the war?
Before the war, as I always say to my husband, he used to call me, but the boys were. I mean, I was 13 years old. Mm-hmm. I had no affiliation, but we knew we belonged to the, you know, like the girls belonged to the Shamar Tzair, we belonged to the Chalutz, but all organizations that, you know, that had to do more with fun than, you know, with...
It was social.
Social, right.
That's
it was
good.
Social things.
That's great. Then did your family belong to any Jewish organizations?
I don't know. I don't remember, and I don't think so. I really don't. I did not pay attention, really, to those things.
The school that you were in, how did the teachers treat you? The Polish school.
Absolutely good.
They were civilians. They weren't... people that worked for the government. They were just...
No, they were teachers.
Or your teachers.
Teachers. Of course, our schools were run different than the schools here. Homework had to be done. In a classroom, you conducted yourself like a pupil. In the street, if you met a teacher, you conducted yourself accordingly. My children laugh when I say it. But this is... A teacher was something that you looked at.
You respected.
Right. You came prepared for school, and we had a marvelous life. In school, we learned. By the time when we finished seventh grades, which this was like, here I would say, like 12th grade of high school.
Then how old would you be after you finished seventh grade?
Well, you start at six.
Yeah, so you'd go straight through.
That would
be the eighth grade in here.
I could be
the eighth
more
grade
than,
here.
But the materials that we took and the education that we got, and if you took a language, you had to learn that language. It wasn't just on your roster that you take French or English or whatever. I mean, you brought in your homework and it was taken for granted that you learned it. Or you were left in the grade staying for 2-3 years. You didn't just go. You just did whatever had to be done. I, as a rule, did not encounter any anti-Semitism. I went to Polish school, Polish friends, I had Jewish friends too, but we were all together.
Did you meet after school? Was there such a thing as clubs or organizations in the school that you were allowed to? Or
we had a choir. Right. We sang.
But everybody belonged.
Belonged. We had religion. And that's an interesting issue, because religion was separated into Jewish religion and into Gentile religion. I mean, otherwise, when we had Jewish religion, they used to come a teacher. Yes, there came a teacher from the Hebrew University, and he taught us Jewish religion.
Students went to that. And
yeah,
the Christian students went to
their
other
religion,
and that was given in part of each day, or maybe two or three times during the week.
I would say two or three times, not every day, but two or three times during the week.
But they also had theirs, and
yes,
you were not forced in any way to protect or to
absolutely
to be
not
theirs.
Absolutely not. Absolutely not.
How many people do you think lived in that town?
I would say before the war.
Yeah. At that time.
10,000.
And of that, how many do you think were Jewish?
I would say 4 or 5,000.
Mm-hmm. Almost half.
Almost half. We had two Jewish newspapers in the city. We had a lot of organizations. This I know because I was not joining, but I saw all the, like, my cousins. We had a Hebrew school and a Hebrew high school, which called gymnasium,
mm-hmm,
and lyceum. We had a Yiddish school, a Yiddish off-limit Yiddish school. It's like my husband said, we had two papers, but we had only one boss. But this was our town, very Jewish. And we lived a very normal and happy life.
Then were there social events that were Jewish that you would go to, say, in anywhere besides? No, you weren't going to. Were you going to the synagogue for children's things?
It,
like
that
children's services?
That was not. It was not in style. That was not the style.
What they do here,
right? You went to synagogue with your parents.
For that services only.
Right, for services only. The synagogue did not cater to anything else but to the services.
Then the rabbi was not somebody who was around all the time, or he was?
He was around, but you came to him with problems of concern, you know, but it did not involve. The children were not affiliated. There was nothing in the synagogue
for
the children.
Of course, that was a different day today.
Right, you had this. This was 19. But I can remember. I would go as close as 1939.
Mm-hmm.
Years when the thing had started, and that was. I mean, first of all, at 13, you are more a child there than here. You know, here you are exposed to so much more. Exposed to television. You're exposed to good books. You're exposed to news. There, you're not.
Then children didn't read newspapers then either.
No.
Parents did.
Parents did.
Did your mother?
My mother did. My father did. But, you know, until the news used to come, it was probably already a half a year old. You were concerned for the things that were going on in town. There was, you know, like a Yiddish kehillah,
yes,
where eventually, you know, you had to give some money to help
was
out.
Was there a name for that? Do you remember? For the kehillah?
Don't. It would be the Pruzhina kehillah. I don't know exactly the name. As I were at that stage where those things did not interest me.
Did you say Prussian?
Pruzhina, that's the name
of the little town.
Right.
Then you weren't aware that your parents weren't really involved in that?
They would be involved to an extent where they would donate some monies.
But that was it.
That was it. This is what I can remember. There were a lot of organizations, this I know, where the youth belonged. There was Shomer Tzayir, there was the Chalutz, there was also a big organization which was not far from our house. I can't think of the name now.
You said Shomer Tzayir?
Yes, Shomer Tzayir.
How
that
would
means
you spell that?
And well, the way I would spell it,
the best you can.
Shomer means watch. Watch Hatzayir means young.
S-H-O-M-E-R.
Yes, Shomer.
And the other, the second one?
Atzayir. Atzayir means young. That was like an Israeli, you know, H A T.
H A T.
Z A I R. Atzayir.
Right.
Approximately.
And that was an organization for.
Was a young organization.
Youth.
Yes.
But you didn't belong to that, or you weren't old.
I don't think I was old enough to belong to this.
In other words, it would be for young adults.
It would be, you know, like starting from age 17, 18, something like this.
And we're talking before that.
Before that. We're talking way before that.
So you had no, literally, you had a good young life.
A wonderful young life. A wonderful young life.
With parents who were close to
parents that were close to us, family around us. Our children were very well educated.
Uncles and aunts?
Uncles and aunts. I have traced like about, I would say, over 100 people.
From that town?
From that town and around little town that married out, that were lost, that were killed during the Holocaust. The reason that we all stayed together is because family just stayed together. That's all there was doing.
There was no reason to leave.
There was no reason to leave. I had two uncles. There were two brothers of my mother. My oldest uncle, who lived here in New York, and my youngest mother's brother, who just passed away about 4 years ago. He left for Cuba because he was taken to the Israeli army. To the Polish army. And his brother could not take him into the United States because there was always a quota, you know, going on. So he came to Cuba. And when the war started, I think in 1939 and 40, he brought him over, or maybe before, a year to the United States. And he was in the army.
So he was in for how long, do you think?
Where?
In the army.
In the army. I would think he was in for about 3 years.
Did he ever talk about his treatment in the army?
No, I never discussed these things with him. He remembered us. I mean, I have still pictures with him as a child. He lived in our house. My mother was his sister. So, and I was the only survivor of that whole family. In Germany, he started looking for me in 1945, but he couldn't find me, and he had to return to the United States with his unit. So he left a letter with a cousin of mine that he is looking for me. My cousin did not know at that time that I am alive, but he heard from people, you know, we went from town to town, and wherever we came, we put our names down. Like we wandered one after the other. You came, you stopped, and you looked and you searched for names. Some found, some didn't find nothing. So, but this was like the procedure, how to go through it.
That was after.
That was after the war. Yeah.
Let's go back to this when you were young. When did you start to feel the effect of the Nazis?
All right, the war started in 1939.
Where were you at that time?
I was in Pozsony, in my hometown.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't even know what war is. What I learned in history were wars that happened somewhere else. I mean, what kind of war would come to us? I mean, why? What for? And children were not allowed to listen in on certain things. You know, there was always that thing. And then the war started.
This was
1939. In September, or was it in October, something like this. I don't know the exact dates. And it was a very brief encounter. So the war started, nobody knew what was going on. It was at that time that Germany and Russia made a pact and divided Poland in half. And our
39.
Part of Poland fell under the Russians. And we are close to the Russian border, so we fell under the Russians. Okay? They didn't kill us. They had other methods. They took away the businesses, but they didn't take away your life.
And they took your father's business?
They took all the businesses.
You were 13 at the time.
I was 13 at that time. And they gave you out passports. Otherwise, everybody had to carry a passport. With your name, your birth, a certificate. And if your father had a business, then you had a number. That number was very bad. Otherwise, it meant that you exploited people. If people worked for you, then you exploited them. Because in Russia, as you know, everything belongs to the government. You work for the government. Everything is taken care of. But if people were happy working for you, that doesn't matter. You got, it was 11, they called it, number 11. They started reorganizing the city, they made schools, and we all went back to school.
You stayed in your house?
We stayed in our house. And in fact, every house had to take in, like they brought in a lot of soldiers, you know. And our town, I don't know for the reason.
German?
No, the
Russians.
Russians.
Right.
I haven't seen a German at that time yet. But they brought in a lot of Russian soldiers. And I don't know for what reason, but I guess we had a lot of empty lots in the end of the town. I mean, it wasn't overpopulated. And they stationed some airfields there, which is interesting for a small town like this. We went to school, and again it started. Russia is very hard on teaching. You got to know what you are doing there. And a lot of kids that could not attend school, they had to go out and work before the war, went now to school back because it was free. In fact, they paid you if you made good marks. You got what they call a stipendium.
The government.
The government, absolutely. There's a lot of things that are not known. I mean,
the Russian government.
Yeah. If you made good marks, they paid. Didn't pay much.
The Jewish people were paid.
Jewish or Gentile, didn't matter. We all went to school together again. The businesses were taking away.
Then how did your father make the letter?
My father was very upset since they took, and they let him stay for a while in the bakery because they needed bread anyway. So he was working in the bakery, which he never did before. He was always up front because he inherited from his father, and he was what they call the balabos of the bakery. Now he had to go in the back and work with everybody together. It still did not affect our children. We were happy. I mean, we had enough to eat.
Because he could run the store and the bakery, what, did they pay him? Or what, did he have any kind of an income?
No.
Then how were you expected to live?
Well, we expected to live on what we had. There was no payment for it.
Were there other people put in the store with him?
Yes. There were people
that
were there before, and some others that they chose of their own choosing to put in the store to work. Of course, to my father, that was devastating, but so it was done to everybody else. The stores were taken over. We remained in our house. The first time that I realized that there is something wrong, the Russians have three organizations, otherwise they start preparing you to be a communist in the very early stages. This is their main thing. Otherwise, as little as we were involved with parties belonging,
political parties,
this is their main aim. So you start them very young. As I fell in already, I was 13, so I was already, the name of the party is called Komsomol.
How would you spell that?
Komsomol. Komsomol. Yeah, it's about, that would be Russian.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Now, of course, there were a lot of Jews, and for that matter, Gentiles too, that were not rich in the town. You know, not everybody can be rich and well-off and well-to-do. But I don't think anybody went hungry to bed. But there are a lot that came back to school that were out working at an early age. You know, like quitting school at 13 and 14, going out working as tailors, as, you know, making a living and helping the parents to raise the families. Families were as usual big, you know, 5, 6, and 7 children. And there was that guy, a Jewish guy, and he started organizing the girls and the boys for this party. Otherwise, that party would meet at night, they would have dances, they would talk about politics. And as children, you know, everybody's very anxious, you know. He came over to me and said, "You are not going to be long." I said, "Why? I'm not doing anything wrong." He said, "You're not going to be long because of your father's statue before." And I came home crying. I said, "Because if you, I cannot belong to that party. And I'll be the only one that doesn't belong to it." My father tried to explain to me, but I didn't take no for an answer. I just wanted to go where everybody else went, having a good time singing and dancing and listening to the speeches. I mean, to me it was interesting, whatever they talked about. I didn't know yet what. And I knew then that there's going to be a great difference. I didn't know what's going to happen, but this.
Wait, you said because of your father's stature?
Right.
Is that the word you
right.
used?
Because of my father being an owner of a business.
A number 11.
A number 11.
It was on his passport.
It was on his, whatever they call it, a passport. It was like a dangerous, it was, otherwise you exploited. People that worked for you were exploited rather than worked. No matter, they didn't ask nobody how they were treated or whatever, but this was like the sentence. So, of course, I was very upset. I was young. I wanted to know what's going on, but I couldn't belong. Times started to get rougher.
You were still 13 then.
I, that was in 1939, 40. Mm-hmm. Already, it's gone 40.
Going on 14.
Yeah. And, but we still met together, the girls and the boys, you know, and talking.
And these parties were mixed, Jewish and Christian.
The parties were mixed, yeah.
Right.
A lot of Poles, Polish families, started to try and live, you know, try to take their families and go away. Otherwise, people that were in higher, like people that were in the military and lived with their families, government people, and they knew, you know, what the consequences might be, because this is how they were going. First, after the owners of the stores or maggots or factory or whatever, then after them, they started
the
taking.
Did Jewish people try to leave at that time?
No.
There was no reason yet, or they didn't understand.
They didn't understand. There was one big organization, which is called Bund.
Oh, yes. Okay.
Which was not acceptable at the Polish times, because they were very communistically inclined. But it was very big. A lot of Jewish people belonged to it. A lot of Jewish youth, and I mean youth, I mean the older ones. What I mean by youth, we were youth when we were 18, 19. We were not youth at 13, 14. We were children. This is the big difference here. We were children. We played with schmucker dolls, and we did not take any great interest in political things. That was not the thing to do. We started looking at boys, of course, but political things did not interest us at all.
But the Bund was a regular organization.
Regular organization that was not allowed by the Polish, but now at time it just so happened that it was very big. Now the Russians did not like them either. They had gathered them together and they sent them away to Siberia. It just so happened that in Siberia they didn't get killed. They survived.
Did you know people who were sent? Were they friends of yours?
No, they were older.
They were older. But you knew the families?
I knew their families. I knew a few families.
And they were young adults that were sent?
They were young adults. They were